Hello and welcome to Unfrozen. I'm Dan Safarik.
And I'm Greg Lindsay, and welcome to the first installment of the long-promised Metaverse Metropolis series here on Unfrozen, an occasional episode that we're going to do over the next 6 months or so, which coincides with the project that I'm leading at Cornell Tech University in New York. This is a whole sort of year-long fellowship that I'm doing that really sort of explores the implications of mostly augmented reality, but also, particularly today, of virtual reality. Its implications for cities, how we design them, how we build them, how we use them. And I'm very pleased to introduce a pair of guests today to talk about their amazing work in this area. We're joined first by Andrea Ion-Kojikoru, who's the founder and CEO of Numina, which is basically, she is an architect who has built a company that is basically building the underlying technology for building virtual worlds, not terrible virtual worlds like Meta's, but amazing virtual worlds, one of which is Spectra Cities, which is a new company founded by Ryan Rzepke, a name I know I just mispronounced because I can never get Ryan's name, but Ryan is best known as the founder of Social... Chapetsky. I say it's thank you, Nick. Appreciate it. That was Nick Kaufman. He's the director of community events and developer relations at Spectra. Ryan is the founder of Social Bicycles, which became Jump Bikes, which many of you know, and sold that to Uber. And Ryan was one of the several people out there who has talked publicly about building cities from scratch. It's through the work of Nick and Andrea, in part, that Ryan has sort of refocused Spectra on building virtual cities that will perhaps someday spawn real ones. And so we're very pleased to have them both on today to talk a bit about this. So thanks. Thanks for joining us on Unfrozen. Let's kick it off. I want to obviously start with, I guess, with Andrea here, obviously, as you know, as the architect. Nick, of course, an urbanist as well. And I would say on both will note that I'm very pleased to have them both on because they really bring a true urban and architectural perspective to these technologies. They're not technologists. But Andrea, I guess I'd love to start with you because I think it's interesting that virtual reality is one technology that architects know really well inherently and have been using for years. I recently did a webinar, for example, with Chris Sharples of Shop Architects, and they walk through all the interesting ways they're using VR really in the studio for rendering environments. But you're the one building VR, really taking those tools and crowdsourcing them. So could you talk a bit about really the inspiration for Numina? And yeah, we'll go from there.
Yeah, definitely. So we have a rule in the studio, which is we do not use VR for pure visualization purposes, which is how I know most other architecture companies use VR. I think focusing on visualization, which of course VR does is what VR does best, is for me the least interesting thing about VR. And I'll name just a few things based on the projects we have on the drawing board right now. A few things that are potentially much more interesting than just looking at stuff. So one of them is developing tools for participatory design. So using virtual reality and the ability to allow everyone to see things one-to-one. So using that to eliminate a level of abstraction that we usually have in architectural drawings, but again, not just to see and understand, but to go one step deeper and allow those people to use that deeper understanding to actually make changes themselves. Where VR as a visualization technology stops is where you're just showing people, you're bringing them on board when they're understanding, but then the most that you do, you allow them to change the color of the kitchen counter. And you stop there. So at Numina, we're arguing that you can go way, way beyond that. That once people do have an understanding of the space, there is a wealth of design decisions, proper design decisions that people can make for themselves. And we've been experimenting with that with some clients of ours. And the second thing that I'll throw out there, this goes a bit into a different direction. We work on architecture projects with a VR component like Spectra, but we also develop games. We have developed two AR games, location-based games for museums, and now we are developing our first virtual reality game. And because we're all coding architects, of course, at the center of the game is a building. But to make everything, to take it to the next level, you play half of the game in the building in the dark. So you interact spatially, because it's still a space and you still interact with it, but actually you don't see anything. And that's the best part of the entire game, if I might add that.
Interesting. I'm going to try to figure out, like, I'm trying to play a version of that with haptic feedback would be my immediate thought on that one, of how that would go. But that's amazing. And also, I mean, it's really interesting, the intersection, just before going to Nick here, about architecture and games and VR. I mean, things that come to mind is, like, you know, the way I would describe to a total layperson that what both of you are doing in a way is Minecraft for real. And, you know, other people have talked about SimCity for real when it comes to these combination of technologies. Or going back to Myst is what I just thought of when you were describing that, Andrea, of, like, you know, these walkthrough of beautiful, or like the whole point of Myst was the environment, really, obviously the puzzles and things. But yeah, that virtualization of it is key. It's really interesting. Well, Nick, obviously, so I've known Nick for over a decade when he was at LSE. And Nick has taken me to VR hackathons. We've been to placemaking events. And what I find really interesting is that Spectra sits kind of at the intersection of those two. So yeah, can you talk a bit about sort of like what Spectra is up to, and particularly how you're using it as this virtual sandbox to think about how we would do feedback into the urban realms?
Yeah, first of all, I'm just so grateful to Andrea for, we met last summer at a workshop that Andrea hosted online, and I was so excited by these ideas, partially because we'd been exploring them right earlier, and seeing that this has become a full-fledged space now, like the transdisciplinary space of between XR and urbanism, is just so exciting for me. And so getting into this project was a bit strange because I had actually like had this weird dream about digital twins the day before I heard about Spectra, about like people traveling to build a city that they had been training in virtual reality for to build. And then the next day, Andrea mentioned this project and I'm like, this is really bizarre, but it's so exciting. I guess if I had two things to add from my perspective doing community for an open source project like this, number one is that none of this is actually new. And we're not like a typical metaverse startup trying to say this is the first this or the first that. There may be firsts, but as far as I'm concerned, immersive media itself, and of course urbanism, is not a new thing at all. And in our research to develop the community concept for Spectra, we came across many historical, recent, and ancient examples of using immersive media and design to like imagine cities. And of course, like, imagination has always been with us. And so thinking again about the relationship between imagination, future cities, and then the affordances of what the technology we have right now is interesting to me. And I could speak more on that. The second thing is that I think we're trying to explore how we produce space collectively. And a really important aspect of Spectra Cities is, as both a living laboratory and a potential, you know, city, the vision of it is to be cooperative, with many layers of cooperative activity feeding up into the symbiotic relationship of the top-down and the bottom-up processes, that the human processes that make cities. And so I think my second point would be that the production of space is social. And I think more than ever, with the current technology, we have the opportunity to embrace that again. And I know Andrea can speak a lot about how architects have worked the status quo and how user testing has not been really a consideration for them. But now the way that people are building spaces vernacularly, like in Minecraft, people are growing up with this as a basic skill set. And of course, we all know that architecture, like most of it, was already built not by architects around the world, right? But now that's true digitally as well. And so I'm very interested in how production of spaces is going to be this new connection of people from many disciplines, and then ordinary people as well, especially ordinary people. So yeah, those are the two things that I learned a lot from Spectra. We're very early. We have many different possible use cases for it. So a living laboratory, is it a real city? You have questions. I don't have answers for you, but I would invite everyone to come check it out and help build with us and imagine together.
Thanks, Nick. I would say this is a point where I should have mentioned at the very top of the podcast, I'll mention at the bottom, and we'll put in the show notes as well, that first off, if you want to hear from Andrea and you're at South By, she's got a session. She can tell you when exactly that is. I've lost track on the giant schedule that is South By Southwest. And then Andrea will also be at Cornell Tech on March 21st for an event we're hosting called Placemaking Across Realities, which is going to explore some of the issues as well. So she'll be there with Ryan from Spectre Cities, and a panel that I'll be moderating as well. But we'll put some details in the show notes. But I want to go back for the two of you, tease apart. Nick was really getting to it with digital twins and also that sort of participatory part, which of course is like the idea here that, you know, we've seen in the last year or so with the combination of both VR metaverses and AR to an extent, but also the generative AI stuff that's emerging, where we've seen startups and nonprofits like Transform Your City and some others using generative AI to do rapid prototyping of public space or reimagining, you know, bicycle lanes and streets and whatnot as a way to enable everyday users, everyday people, residents to imagine their cityscapes. This, of course, I imagine is anathema to a lot of architects who are just terrified to lose control over this. And so I would love for the two of you to talk further. Andrea, you first, please, about how we start changing the entire paradigm here about the production of space by creating this, you know, zero cost digital, not even digital replica, but digital creation engine that really sort of takes those tools away from the visualization pros within this architecture firm. So I guess my question there is, what is the imagined version? What is the fully mature version of Numina look like? And this sort of new production of space, this new workflow that goes outside of the firm or around it or beyond it.
Let me start with Spectra and mentioning something very important, which is the fact that the entire city we have built, which is continuously changing through the community, is a CC0 repository. So this is at the heart of everything. And we had many discussions about how we are going to communicate the idea of an open source city. What is an open source city? How we're going to run an open source city, who owns the open source city, who's allowed to sell the open source city, and how, what kind of licenses we're going to use. So all of a sudden, we found ourselves in the midst of a conversation that felt very new and foreign, but also fresh and exciting for me as an architect, because I've never run into any of these things before. And something that came to mind while I was trying to talk to Ryan and Nick about how drastically different the world of architects is from the kind of conversations we're having with a CC0 city is this episode from school where a classmate of mine used a planter layout. So just like a grouping of some cabbages in AutoCAD that another classmate of ours had made. And there was an entire discussion that came out of that, whether that's plagiarism or not. And here we are discussing about having an entire city with drawings and 3D models and everything just available for everyone for free. So the mindset of architects, and that mindset starts in school, is really that you have to sink your teeth into your work and protect it because every single line is your line and you're some kind of artist. And the idea of giving that line to everyone else to touch it is really, it's really like the biggest sin you can commit. And that's drilled into your head in school to the extent to which giving that line to your desk mate is like plagiarism. So that to me really is the heart of many, many issues with mindset that we have in architecture. And to also speak to how stubborn this issue is, I myself was oblivious to just how bad it was until I started engaging in these conversations and in this idea of the CC0 city. Like I was not aware of how, you know, it's kind of like that thing that it's so natural because you grew up with it and you know, also as architects, we go to undergrad and then we go to grad school and like it takes like forever until we actually become architects and then we get licensed and that takes years and years. So there's this like incredibly long education process where we become indoctrinated with things that sit so deeply inside us that it's almost impossible for us to question them. And it takes something so radical as a CC0 city. So if anything, I hope people will be interested in this proposition just because of how radical and absurd it is. And I almost wish we would start a movement with just like propose absurd stuff in architecture, even if the sole purpose of these exercises is to get the demons out of us and get the preconditioning out of us.
Thank you so much for that. I just want to know for listeners who are unfamiliar with the term, CC0 refers to Creative Commons License Zero, which is basically just putting it in public domain and no rights whatsoever. So yeah, a totally radicalized version of that one for sure. So thank you, Andrea. Yeah, Nick, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this as well. I was like, yes, like you're even less traditional than I am, and I'm the least traditional person on here.
Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly new to me. I've met some open source architects before. There was an old sticker in the civic tech movement a lot of people put on their laptops that said open source all the cities. And I think mainly that was referring to civic data, particularly trying to make civic data more transparent and open in cities. But we also talk in urbanism placemaking about the commons a lot. And so thinking about creative commons licenses and the idea of the commons in the cities, there's a lot of overlap there. And I don't pretend that we're treading new ground here, but for a lot of people, it is incredibly new ground. And we haven't figured these issues out. There are projects for open source architecture that have been started in the past few decades, and experimental development paradigms like Baugruppen in Germany, where families will get together and develop an apartment building together. But these models are not widespread by any means, and they still struggle to figure out how they work. And so to do something on the scale of a city is, like Andrea said, it is so bold, daring. Only someone like Ryan Jepetsky could have come up with an idea that is, I think he set a North Star for us that is so ambitious that it's lifted up all of the rest of the stuff that we're doing to support it. And like, whether or not you believe that you want to build a real city in real life the way that Ryan does, the other types of things that come out of just this imagination exercise, I think are potentially even more impactful. It has a potential to impact many different cities, I think, and how they're developed in the 21st century.
I have a question, as I'm hearing all of this, you know, this is really the definition of disruptive. I mean, you hear disruptive used a lot in the tech world, not that much in architecture. But this truly seems to disrupt the practice, not only of architecture, but even of development, because you're sort of outsourcing development to the community or the broader community. Between this and ChatGPT, which I'm sure could be configured to spew architectural bullshit without too much effort, is the role of the architect, which is already pretty diminished in the supply chain of the built world, is this the nail in the coffin, or is this open up a whole new dimension? Do they become sort of like the master of a different set of reality and signifiers?
I want to add something. In terms of what exactly is the disruptive element? This also relates to Nick mentioning several times that what we're talking about here is nothing new. I don't entirely agree. And I think it is important that we try to put our finger on what exactly is new, what exactly is disruptive. Because yes, a lot of conceptual things in the room are not new. And this is just a new reframing of them through particular pieces of technology. But I do want to argue that several things are so new that it goes beyond the reframing, at least in my opinion. Let me give you an example. There's something disruptive about participatory design tools through virtual reality. We had a client in the office for whom we designed a small house. And we have a tool in virtual reality that allows you to go in VR and edit parts of that house in VR at one-to-one scale. And when we were working on the massing, we got this family in the office, and we were trying to decide together with them, where should we put their main porch? and the light was crucial. So we have in VR the ability to just grab the sun and move the sun around to look at different times of the day and of the year. And it was very clear what parts of the house would get light at what times of the day. The client could reposition the entire house, could reshape the entire house, and could move the porch wherever they wanted. So then I said, look, as soon as you have the simple tools in your hands right now, and you could move the house, you see where the extent is of your construction site, go ahead and put your porch wherever you want, and then go ahead and test how much sun you're going to get at every hour of the day on your porch, because you know when you wake up and drink your coffee in the morning. You know what kind of activity you're doing in October at 5 p.m. and if that activity needs sun, direct sun, or not on your porch. I don't know those things. So even though I was trained to be the one who can make the best decisions about the architecture, I actually think you should be the one choosing the best location for the porch that best fits your lifestyle and every detail of what you do every hour, which is only knowledge that you possess, not me. And the client went ahead and did that. And then the spouse went in VR and also did the same exercise without having to necessarily communicate to me what they do in October at 4 p.m. and where. And it was incredible. It was a transformational experience for me as an architect to witness that. So in a way, it was a full relinquishment of my authority, you know, my I know best where to put a porch, because I've learned that in school. and you know, I have 15 years of experience of placing porches. And it was a transformational experience for them as well, because without virtual reality, they would have never had the ability, and without the architectural education, to understand how the sun moves and to understand how to move those massings around. I mean, doing that without VR takes serious work. And you have to go to, you kind of have to go to architecture school to learn how to manipulate that otherwise. So they were completely blown away, not just by the fact that they just designed their porch, but the fact that all of a sudden this technology put an entire area of human activity, which they assume was out of their hands, which they assume was just not accessible to them in their lifetime, on their lap. And it was just amazing. So with Spectra, we're trying to find similar pathways, not exactly what I have described, but similar things that could be equally transformational, but not just at the individual level, but through many individual cases and through their participation in the city, that could just give birth to a transformational experience of planning a city.
Really interesting. I mean, it sounds like in your conception, Andrea, this is really just another tool, but it's an especially powerful one that allows the architect to have much more productive conversations with the client that could potentially save a lot of time and have all the parties emerge from the project much happier.
It turns on its head the role of the architect. I've actually had architect friends who have heard this story from me not speak to me again.
Well, that makes perfect sense. I mean, obviously they must feel so utterly threatened. I mean, it's an attack on that authority, truly the authority of the architect. I mean, how did it make your own ego feel? I mean, it transformed you, but did it humble you first in that regard? I mean, did it make you a revolutionary that way? We're like, you know, are we trying to overthrow the profession now by putting the tools in the hands of users?
Oh, I was ecstatic. I mean, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. That's why I started Numena, and that's why we have coding architects, because first, the power that I was attracted to, which was actually I experienced as higher than or more appealing than the power of knowing how to design the right porch, was the power that an architect could have the moment we learn how to code to design our own tools. And again, this is a provocation to step out of the kind of conditioning we've had to deal with in school, and this idea that there is one or two massive corporations that control our production tools as architects, and that it is completely unthinkable for someone like me, and by that I mean someone that just has a small studio in Germany, to say, oh, actually, you know what? We're just going to code our own tools. Like, most people who hear something like that would just laugh you in the face. It's like, yeah, sure. But there was something so empowering and appealing to me that I just went ahead and did it. So the bigger framing of the experience of seeing the client take agency away from me and seeing the client feel that sense of empowerment, the bigger framing is the sense of empowerment for me as an architect that I made the tool. So yes, maybe I lost something in that I transferred agency to the client, but what I gained by being the one who made the tool to make that happen was way more powerful.
Yes, and you put it that way. It's like, yes, rather be OpenAI or the creators of these, some of these generative tools at this point than that. All the power lies in that indeed. But that's amazing. Well, I want to pivot over to Nick on this one, because when it comes again to like that sort of like putting power in the hands of users or those kinds of difficult conversations. Yeah, I want to get into Nick there about particularly like, so you've been leading basically tours inside the Spectra City space and using it to basically discuss things like these really contentious issues in the real world. Well, I mean, you know, there's a whole at the moment freak out about 15-minute cities and, you know, whether those are dystopian hellscapes. But you're finding it from when we chatted about this, that people are actually able to like set aside some of the really charged discussions and have a more flowing conversation about it because it's a virtual space. Can you talk about that? I love the idea that this could be a diffuse space to think about changes to the built environment because there is that remove of it. And I find that really interesting from a psychological standpoint. So how do people respond to it when like you want to put bike lanes in a Spectra city versus a real one?
Yeah, I have some stories about community. I've been doing community for a long time, but I'd like to start with the specifics. Like, you know, Spectra, we started with tours. We do weekly meetups now. We're just at the early stage of a community. We're starting to grow. And one of the ways we're doing that is having weekly guest speakers in our virtual web optimized version of Spectra on Spatial.io platform, which, by the way, you don't need VR to access. It's mobile accessible, also browser. And so we get people in to tell us about their work in XR or urbanism, just like a real lightning talk, except we're actually in the space of our Spectra intersection. And being able to walk around in, although right now we're still having talks, people, it's like a learning process. So we start by having conversations, but as soon as you realize, oh, wait, I can actually show you this, I can walk here and show you that, then it really changes the types of gatherings that we can have. And one example is that we're talking about the ground floor of Spectra is all car free. It's bike lane, micromobility concept. And where they meet the intersection, there are these like round dots where the lanes meet the roundabout. And Ryan and Andrea were talking in Spatial one day about whether these should be concave or convex. And even now I'm having a hard time thinking of the words to describe this to you, the type of conversation, because in words, it has to be a very black and white, this or that binary conversation. But the way that they're able to talk about it embodied virtually, they can make all these nuanced things about, oh, maybe I want it a little bit like this. And you can also have way more compromises than I think in totally conversation that's happening in a boardroom or in a virtual Brady Bunch like we're in right now on Zoom or whatever. So that's amazing, first of all. And then for community, so back to the history question, there is part of this that I believe has always existed in history. And I do accept Andrea's challenge that there is something that is absolutely shockingly new. And I'll tell two stories about it each. The first one is that, so would you believe that like 100 years ago or more, there were cities being built through urban simulations? It was happening. And there were these schools that started up around turn of the century. The first one was called Freeville, and it was the Junior Republic. And this was I learned from a book by Jennifer Light, the STS historian at MIT. And it was a summer camp, essentially, for troubled youth, where they gave them free rein to be a miniature democracy. And they let them make their own rules and have their own leadership structure, and in the hope that the democratic system would come up with a good solution in the end. And lo and behold, a lot of those kids, when they grew up after experiencing this immersive city republic building summer camp, they became real leaders in society. Not only that, but the technology to develop 21st century cities comes partially from these institutions, including like how do we make them electric, all the new technology that was coming in at that time. And so when we're navigating these like century scale changes, something about immersive media, I believe it's like a cocoon, like a chrysalis. It's a way that we can gather an imagination form to navigate the changes ahead. And right now, of course, it's the poly crisis of the 21st century. How do we navigate this? Imagination, very important, we believe. The second story I'll tell is about what's different. What's shocking to me now is that there are still those immersive education is still around everywhere, especially in VR now. It's a big topic. I've been following what people are doing on these VR social platforms, not the metaverse, chief metaverse officers, you know, like actual ordinary users in Second Life, VR Chat, Minecraft, Roblox, right? It's very common now to have social experience in 3D. And one of the things I've been following is like the music scene, right? Because when I used to live in Tokyo and London as a student, I would always go to the music scene. I was very interested in how music and cities were related and how the structure of the city supports these underground music scenes. And I had an experience recently where I was in VR chat and I was exploring spaces, and one of them was a music venue. I recognized it by name because I'd gone there in Tokyo. I used to go to this place in a neighborhood and saw live music there. Someone had built this one-to-one in VR chat. And when I stepped inside, it looked exactly like the place I remembered the smell. I remembered that table was over there, and this is where I got that guy's autograph. And what are these people doing there? It was a bunch of Japanese users. They were talking in Japanese. I speak Japanese, so I knew enough to tell them, wow, I've been here in real life. And they were like, whoa. But what I found out later, so I imagine maybe it's the venue has set up a digital twin and they're trying to promote. But it was so much weirder. It was apparently, this neighborhood was notable for music at the time. It's like the Brooklyn, and it inspired a lot of TV shows and dramas and animes. And one of those has been popular recently. And so somebody made it because they were a fan of a show that featured a venue from this neighborhood in a city. And so the transmedia connections there were so layer deep, and yet I could still step inside it and remember when I was there in person. And so that really shocked me. And I think what you can have now when it comes to these are real life city-based places and people and communities that are networked globally. And the fact that you can be co-present and influence urban development across the cities is at a scale now that just boggles my mind. There's a venue in Johannesburg, South Africa, that has made a connection with this Japanese VR user community. And now they come and listen to local music in South Africa at this virtual venue, which has simultaneously a real venue performance there. And when I start to think about how that would apply to building cities or connecting cities and the way that communities are forming now around cities like Spectra, which Spectra is not the only new city or city from scratch project out there. Our founder, Ryan, often talks about what if you can build a city with all the people who think like you or all the people from your tribe, right? So how is this sorting out going to play out in the future? Is it going to be a constructive, creative, imaginary force or a destructive force? We have to figure this out. And I think this imagination space is the right place to do it. So I'm looking forward to the types of experiments that we might undertake together.
Very cool. Well, I want to come back. You mentioned several times, Nick, the phrase digital twin, which for listeners who are unfamiliar with it, is another sort of term of art that sort of, in a way, replaced smart cities. But the idea of a digital twin is creating that one-to-one mirror in virtual reality that also is sort of obeys the laws of physics so that you can make changes to something, but you could also see it ripple through supply chains. You can see or trace it back. It's the idea that you can do manipulation of a virtual thing that then has implications in the real world. And I want to get back to that one for the two of you. I know we're almost out of time a little bit here, but Andrea, I want to start with you in the sense of, like, again, where is this all going with the notion of digital twins in architecture and also the built environment? Because I'm curious about, like, how this becomes potentially the UX for architectural design and how that feeds back into the supply chain and how things get built. And I said this before, I have various friends who wondered, how do we disrupt Autodesk? Like, in the sense of, like, how do we take the current paradigm of how the built world gets designed in computers and disrupt it the same way that, like, you know, Canva and Figma and others have done this to Photoshop and other sort of traditional tools and image manipulation. So I'm curious, again, the two of you thinking about, like, what does a mature version of this look like at scale in terms of its implications for design, for supply chains, for these, all the sort of systems that ripple through, because that paradigm has to change sooner rather than later, I hope. But yeah, Andrea, I'm sure you've thought about this more than anyone else has about this. Like, what is, you know, unless you're trying to get acquired by Autodesk as we speak, because that's what they're known to do as well, to make sure that transition never happens the same way Adobe is buying its competition. I'm curious, like, yeah, what do you think your vision is for that complete new stack of which Spectracities is as a client on the very top, and then Numen is the next layer down, and then what's beneath you?
Architecture and the process of getting anything designed and built is still so monumentally complex, and we're not going to get rid of that complexity anytime soon. And basically, that's where all the bad feelings of architects all around the world come from, or at least most of the frustration comes from. It takes 2 to 3 years to get the most basic mid-sized building up. There's something so magical and cursed about the third dimension. The moment you add the damn third dimension, even the smallest folding of two planes and the materiality of that joint becomes like an entire damn discipline that just springs out of the third dimension and messes up with the beauty of any engineering drawing you might have done. So, and then there's also the sheer complexity of all the trades that are involved in getting anything built. So I just want to put that in the center, because that's kind of the murky waters that we're moving, are trying to move ourselves into. And that's always what for me is the biggest contrast with the beautiful theoretical ideas that we love to talk about, and myself included, the beautiful talk about the metaverse and virtual worlds, right? So there's that. And then there's the monolith of complexity that comes with the gazillion trades in the third dimension and materiality. So where am I going with this? I believe that the most important thing is to develop systems that are very sensitive to where the pools and currents are. So in this monolith, there will be forces that are going to pull things in one direction or the other. And I'm hoping that those forces are communities and users as soon as they have participatory design tools in their hands. In my mind, that's going to end up being the force that's strong enough to move the monolith into one direction or another. My problem right now with tools like what Autodesk is producing is that they have no sensitivity to the different forces active in this monolith. They're kind of monolithical themselves. They're very prescriptive. They're very kind of like lacking any kind of finesse. So what I'm hoping for, I hope this answers your question, it's a very roundabout way of answering it. What I'm hoping we will see, what I'm hoping we will produce, what I'm hoping will come out of Spectra are systems capable of dealing with all the complexity that I talked about, but that are sensitive enough to feel the currents, and that they will enable for the strongest currents to let things sway, let things move, and that we will be there and we will be smart enough to recognize what those forces and what those currents are. And now really quickly about the digital twins, I want to add something that is important for me. I think a lot of what we're seeing out there in terms of digital twins is very misleading, and it's a lot of marketing material, a lot of it that's being pushed by game engine companies. There are two use cases that I'm seeing for having a virtual copy of a building or a city. One is what we're doing with Spectra City, which is to allow participation, ideally in the design process, not after it's done. The second use case, which is focused more on the life of the building once it is built, which is some one-to-one copy that's about optimizing building systems. So you're able to run simulations you're getting data for how the building is actually used, and then you're running the simulations, and then you're continuously optimizing, learning things from the simulation and continue optimizing while the building is in use. However, for that, you do not need three-dimensional real-time visualization. You can run that simulation without seeing the data in 3D. You can have the data in your head. It's basically a list of parameters. It's programming. You're running that thing and you're getting outputs. So whenever we're seeing building systems being visualized with this shiny, complex 3D game engines, I think we should just doubt that study case, because it blocks more sensitive uses of the visualization. So we need to be critical. And I'm coming back with my example of our game where we're actually, the main character is a building, but you don't see anything. So that is our essay on being critical about the deceiving nature sometimes of the beauty of these hyper-realistic 3D visualizations.
Just to address your point of moving the monolith, shall we say, I mean, poor efficiency is one of the things that really holds back being able to construct rapidly. It's not so much that we lack the digital tools or even the people with know-how to operate them. Putting aside for the moment your comment about making things more participatory, which is obviously important and a big goal of this project, do you think that there is any overlap here between this, your conceptualization of the way that digital twins might be used, and, you know, robotic construction or any of the other 3D trends like 3D printing that have been ballyhooed in terms of expediting, turning dreams into reality, so to speak?
I believe solutions have to be efficient either today or within the next 5 years. All the projects that I have read on that use robotics for building systems will not meet that criteria. So for me, yes, we should fund them. They're interesting on many levels. We learn things from them, but I do not see them being efficient at scale in the construction industry in the next 5 years. And if we're talking about a longer timeline, well, we're running out of time. So as far as I'm concerned, they're not really relevant.
I want to throw it back one more time to Nick here before we go out from here, which is ultimately the end goal of Spectra. I'm curious, like, Nick, I mean, Ryan talks a lot about the idea that he wants to seed, I think, 10 cities or more. We brought this up on the last episode of Unfrozen, where former President Trump has also talked about building cities from scratch. I can already start to imagine tools like SpectraCities or others start to be used to imagine them. So what do you think is going to happen, Nick, with this in terms of, you know, how does SpectraCities plan to take this virtual into the real world? I mean, there are going to be developer kits. Is it going to be packaged? Like, do you have like the SpectraCities expansion pack kind of thing going from there? Like, I'm sort of curious, like the notion of like, how do you think this filters back into where the language of architecture and urbanism meets games and meets these environments, and this sort of filters from this idea that I can go grab off of, you know, with a CC0 license, a complete like district pack to drop into my plans for my freedom city in Georgia kind of thing. This is starting to sound a little Stevensonian, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Greg, you and me know both, since we're veterans of the smart cities in the 1.0 and the 2010s, and we met, you know, in the heckling booth, you know, witnessing some of the original smart cities proposals. And so, yeah, you know, naturally, when I first heard, you know, Ryan's dream of building a city, my natural response is to be, skeptical, to say the least, right? And so it's certainly, you know, even now for me, the project, building a city from scratch is for me, mm-hmm. one of the lesser interesting parts of the project for me personally. However, I will say that the ambition of building a city from scratch, the idea that that ambition could potentially not just be something that a rich member of a royal family could have, but something that an ordinary person could share with other ordinary people is interesting to me. And I also think that rather than implanting a mega project somewhere just because you can, because you want to for vanity's sake, and searching for where will new cities need to be created or recreated in the 21st century is an interesting idea. And I think that their Spectra's process, because we bring in people from the community and try to explore together new ideas and experimentation, has the potential to be almost an emergency response first aid kit, which does make me think a little bit about maybe Fallout, I think, had this Garden of Eden creation kit. But if you can imagine, like, in the 21st century, maybe due to migration, due to climate change, disaster, or conflict, cities that need to be created for people that are arriving or something. This is a big issue. And so it is worth having these dreams. I think it is worth having this scale of dreams. I'm very interested to explore that with real people on the ground. One of our biggest challenges remains, we're building in the cloud, but how do you integrate that with local cultures of building cities and long-term traditions, indigenous traditions, et cetera, around placemaking? Because local materials, all of this stuff matters. We can build a city, and even Spectra could not avoid imagining a specific context. They picked a warm climate to imagine things like how the apartments are organized with an open front and back for cross flow, and how the open ground floor allows shading in this hot months in the summer. So it's impossible to build in a void a city without imagining something on the ground and actual culture. And so that's something that, you know, is still ahead of us to navigate. But I think personally, you know, if I had to be involved in a mega project, quote unquote, or a smart city, quote unquote, the smart city would be the city that the smartness comes from the people, and the mega project would be that the mega comes from the scale of our network. And I think we have opportunity to continue to complicate those narratives and continuously experiment and speed run the classic follies, right? So that's the hope anyway.
Amazing. All right. Well, for those of you who are listening who want to join those networks, I teased this earlier and looked up the exact details here for you. So you have two bites at the apple to continue this conversation with Andrea in particular and also Nick. The first time will be at South by Southwest, March 14th. That is from Words to Worlds. She'll be on a panel with one of our panelists the next week, Alex Kalum. He's going to be joining us and Andrea at Cornell Tech for, as I mentioned, placemaking across realities. That's at 3 p.m. on March 21st. Free to all. We'll put the registration link in the show notes for there. And Andrea and Ryan will kick things off with a discussion about Numina and Spectra. And then I'll be hosting a panel looking at these things of what game design and urbanism can sort of learn from each other, the builders of virtual worlds and physical ones. And so I think we'll have a really productive interplay there. So on that note, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Nick. Thank you so much, Andrea, for joining us. And this has been another episode of Unfrozen. Thank you both so much.